Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 73. This is Jamie Russo. I own a coworking space in Palo Alto, California. I am the executive director of the Global Workspace Association and the host of the Everything Coworking Podcast. I have a very special guest queued up for today's episode. We are going to dive deep into how to design and equip a best-in-class conference room, a topic that only coworking space owners could geek out about. Speaking of geeking out, I just had a power hour session today with the first cohort of the Coworking Startup School, and we dove into community building and pricing scenarios. There were spreadsheets involved. If you've been considering the Coworking Startup School program, head over to www.coworkingstartupschool.com to get more details and make sure you don't miss out on the next session. I'm putting together the second cohort. This program is for you if you're investing in your coworking space and want to avoid costly mistakes and stress by getting expert and peer support in a highly facilitated environment. We want to make sure that you create the right space for you and your target market right from the beginning. And we want to make sure that you get the business model right so that you're set up for financial stability that matches your goals. We'll review your pro forma, help you with your product mix, design, sourcing furniture, working with vendors, getting your marketing systems down, hiring the right team, or learning how to run the space yourself, of course, getting set up with the right tech and more. You can absolutely piece a lot of support together from the podcast and the new Everything Coworking Facebook group. This program is for people that want to invest in access to a package that provides the information, resources, and support you need when you need it, in the order that you need it, and accompanied by individual access to me, other industry experts, and a curated peer group. So if this sounds like a fit for you, learn more at www.coworkingstartupschool.com. Now, let's dive into today's exciting topic.
Thank you for joining me today. I have a very special guest that I'm excited to dive in with, and he is going to share a number of things that you are going to wish you were taking notes on. So don't forget, you can get the show notes at everythingcoworking.com/73. So today my guest is Michael Everts. He's the president and co-founder of Shared Space, which started in Atlanta. He began his career in the audiovisual industry, where he designed and built collaboration spaces for large corporations across the Southeast, and it's part of the reason why he's on as a guest today. In July 2016, he partnered with Daniel Levison to create Shared Space, a high-tech workspace focused on serving local communities in the Atlanta suburbs. And since opening, Shared Space has been growing. Since I've known Michael, they've been on a growth spurt, and I'll let him share more of that. They've opened a second location in Atlanta, and they're opening a third location. I'll let him share the details. Michael's passion for co-working is literally contagious. He has so much energy, is so passionate, and cares so much about the back end of the business as the front end. I like to refer to Michael as the operations poster child for co-working. You should see his Trello boards. And we're not on video or else I'd make him share a screen. But he's always on top of the latest and greatest technology to use on automating processes and also creating a better member experience. And every time I talk to him, he has a new tip or tool. He was one of the panelists for a recent GWA Coworking Council live virtual event that we did on the coworking tech stack. And his contributions made me realize I needed to get him on the podcast. So Michael, thank you for joining me today. It's so good to have you.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for that introduction. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation. So before we dive into the geeky stuff, we need to get your background. I always love interviewing operators because I don't do that so often. And I think my audience is super interested in hearing the background and how people got started. So tell us about your coworking moment and how you decided to get into coworking.
For sure. So right after I graduated from Auburn University in 2012, I've always had a love and a passion for technology. And I applied for this audiovisual company in Atlanta called Avive. Avive really focuses on high-end corporate experiences, audiovisual experiences. They worked with clients like SunTrust, Georgia Power, Georgia Pacific, and really worked with their executive teams to design and build collaboration spaces that they can use in all aspects of that business. And so I had some great mentors there, kind of was taken under the wing of one of the founders of Avive and kind of learned how to design, build, and just kind of interact within these spaces. And, you know, it worked there for about 4 years and loved it. But in 2016, an opportunity presented itself to partner up with a guy named Daniel Levison, one of the dads of one of my best friends from high school, who'd been a real estate guy for the past 40 years. And he just started this newfangled co-working business. So I got with Danny in early 2016, and we really started to kind of design Shared Space. And from then on out, design the conference experiences at Shared Space. And since then, Jamie, you filled everybody in on the rest of kind of the history of Shared Space. But yeah, now we're on to our third location that we're planning on building in Augusta later this year. And it should be open in November. So we're super excited about that. And it's very relevant because just yesterday I was designing some of the final conference room layouts. So this is perfect timing.
Yeah, Michael wears, it sometimes just surprises me the number of hats you wear. I mean, as we all do, but you into the design, into the tech, you manage all the people, you really, you know, are making it happen. Well, remind me, you started with 5,000 square feet and then doubled that?
Yeah, so in 2016, we had the top floor of a traditional office building, and we only had 5,000 square feet, 10 private offices, and 2 conference rooms. And yeah, when we first started, you know, even in 2016, co-working was still relatively new, and we didn't really anticipate kind of the growth that we'd see for our space. You know, we're pretty uniquely positioned in the Atlanta suburbs. We have a lot of big players that are down in kind of the central parts of Atlanta, but we really wanted to focus on those suburban communities. Atlanta traffic is horrible. And this gives opportunity to kind of find a community, a space near them where they didn't have to, you know, fight the Atlanta traffic every day and drive 1 to 2 hours just to get to a nice workplace. And as you know, we were just talking about traffic in California.
Right, like in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. It resonated very, very well with the local community we were in Dunwoody, which is the part of Atlanta our first location was in. So within 6 months, we nearly filled up our entire space and we were kind of bursting at the seams. And at that point, we kind of negotiated agreement with the other tenant on the floor and ended up taking over the entire fifth floor, which was 15,000 square feet. So yeah, that was within our first year of opening. And just 2 months ago, we opened our second location right near kind of SunTrust Park, which is a brand new live, work, play sports development that the Braves built. And we're situated right next to that in Cobb County. And just the feedback on that has been great. We've really implemented a lot of things we learned from our first space into the second location at Cobb and are now doing that for the third one in Augusta.
And all your spaces are a mix of private / team space and then dedicated desks and co-working.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Of course.
yeah, event space as well.
An event space, right. And you have training rooms. Do you have training rooms in all of your locations?
Yes, we do. We're actually one of our tenants, Digital Crafts, which is a large code school within Atlanta. They've been working out of our new Cobb location and they're working out of our event space, which doubles as a training room. But yes, event space, there's a lot of demand for event space in the market, event space and training space. And right now, besides hotels, there isn't a whole lot of options. So people right now are looking for places to have good trainings that are not necessarily hotels. And so they're jumping at co-working spaces because they provide a better experience and environment for the kind of training they're trying to give.
Love it. Okay, so let's get into the geeky part and talk about conference room technology. Awesome. Yeah.
My favorite.
And it's a big topic for new operators and planning spaces and also existing operators who want to give their members and their visitors a no-stress experience in their meeting rooms. Like, it's the worst feeling when someone's, you know, in as a guest and they're having a hard time connecting or projecting or whatever it may be. So everybody wants to stay up on what's most current and also just easy for everyone to use. And I've been getting a lot of questions about conference room tech. So this is a really timely topic. So yeah, let's dive in. So, you know, I'm just going to kind of run through and get some of your favorite tech solutions, processes. And this is Michael's background. So some of it, you know, is like sort of what he's grown up with. And then experiments he's had in his spaces, and he's going to share a lot about that. So I think one of the biggest questions we all struggle with is like, what's the best way to project wireless? Well, first, let me just back up. How do you manage meeting rooms in your space? How many do you tend to have? And then are they all members only, open to the public? Sort of what's your meeting room setup and philosophy?
So yeah, so our members, depending on their membership level, get a certain amount of credits, and they are able to go online and book these meeting rooms. And we also have a mobile app. They can go through the mobile app and book it on their phone in a very easy experience. We also have kind of display tablets up on the wall, and I'll get into the little specifics of that technology in a little bit. But, you know, as Jamie mentioned, making the experience easy was definitely a focal point when we were designing our beginning conference rooms. You know, as I mentioned, I worked for that audiovisual company, and we would install these amazing, beautiful systems with these really high-tech touch panels. And what I found is that a lot of people became intimidated by the systems. Mm. And would only end up using 10 to 15% of the functionality of the system because it had so many buttons and it was overwhelming and it was a lot. And it could do really cool things, but very few people knew how to actually do those cool things on these high-end systems. And that's, you know, that's just as you add more complexity into the systems, it can be difficult to use them. So when we were first building the conference rooms at Shared Space, first and foremost, it was about making the experience extremely easy to use. At the same time, that also helps you and your staff, because the more complicated your conference room is, the more hours per day your community manager will spend going in there, you know, unplugging and replugging the HDMI cable, the basic stuff that people always tend to have so much problems with. The more complicated you make your room, as high tech and cool as it might be, at the end of the day, it's going to lead to more issues that your members have who might not be as experienced with the technology as you are. So right. Yeah, when we first started Shared Space, that was one of the biggest points. You know, we only had two conference rooms at the time. We now have 15 we manage between both of our spaces, and more soon with Augusta. But yeah, that was the first thing we did, and it really, really resonated well with the customers.
Yeah, and nothing's more nerve-wracking than being a community manager who needs to go into an important meeting and help somebody fix their tech, and they're getting grumpy.
Oh, because it's the worst feeling. You got 16 eyes looking at you and 16 different people telling you how they would do it, and it's not a fun experience at all. If anyone's
been. Okay, so let's dive in and get some of your recommendations. So one of the big topics is projecting wirelessly and sort of the best tech for that and how to handle wireless / cable management, that good stuff.
Yes, so this is an issue that I've been dealing with since I entered the audiovisual industry about 6 or 7 years ago. To this day, I mean, there are definitely options to project wirelessly, but I'm not going to say there's any perfect solution yet. At the end of the day, an HDMI is always going to be your best friend when you want to connect to a conference TV. Now, an HDMI might not always be an option depending on where your cable is, but I always like to say as a rule of thumb, you need to have an HDMI backup, because at the end of the day, the wireless technology always has the potential to fail. I'm not saying it will, but with that HDMI, you know, connection, you always have a guaranteed route into the TV, no matter what laptop that person has, no matter what software they're running, no matter if your internet is working. So first, I just want to make sure that you have an HDMI plug into the TV or a wall port. We also supply mini DisplayPort dongles at all of our
companies. I was just going to ask you, how do you handle the adapters?
There's so many different adapters. And normally if someone has a weird adapter with their laptop, they know it and they have that adapter. Yeah. But more than anything, I see mini DisplayPort. And that's that little rectangular looking port you see in a lot of MacBook Airs and a lot of Windows PCs, but it's smaller than the HDMI. And we find that if we either hold those at the front desk or put them in the conference rooms, it reduces the amount of times, again, we have to come and get bugged by a guest. I'm not bugged. Bugged is the wrong word, but asked for help.
And then in terms of,
HDMI, sorry, I just had to get that, the forward out there, because some people are just like, oh, I don't need HDMI. Who's going to connect with that with a cable? Right. But it's good to always have that regardless. So number one I recommend is the Apple TV. Now, I'm a Microsoft guy myself, so this is not applicable to me. But most people within my co-working space use Macs. And that's just a trend that I've seen. Jamie, I don't know if you see the same trend. What does it look like at your space?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I should look. We have a little infographic on our website that shows the split. It's strongly Mac for sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe 75%.
And so Apple TV has been out for a while, but using a technology called AirPlay, it is extremely easy to wirelessly connect and share your screen with the display. Apple TVs are only about $150. You don't need any of the high-end, more expensive ones. The main thing that you have that Apple TV there is to allow your Mac users to wirelessly connect to that display. As a side note, the Apple TVs have a mode within them that's called Enable Conference Room Display, which, as you know, when the background comes up and it's panning through some really pretty images or drone footage, it will actually show the network it's connected to and the name of the conference room that it's currently in. So someone jumping in that conference room sees very visually in front of them how to easily connect and use that display. So highly, highly recommend Apple TVs. For most of those Mac users out there, it's just easy to use and they don't have to worry about it. And I feel like at this point, most people know how to use Apple TVs by now. So less kind of maintenance and work from your staff to train people on them.
Train, yep. So somebody mentioned recently to me that they have problems with Apple TV dropping the signal.
We have 7 or 8 Apple TVs on our network, all named to the name of the conference room.
Yep.
We've never run into that issue. It definitely could be something to do with the router, but luckily we haven't run into that issue. You know, I imagine if you had more than 7, if you had maybe 20 or so, I could see it running into an issue, but that's only really much, much bigger spaces. Our space is about 15,000 square feet. Yep. And so we have no problem with 7.
Cool.
So next, for those Microsoft people out there, there's something called a Windows Microsoft Miracast adapter that allows you to use a technology called Miracast that many Android phones have as well as Windows computers, to project your laptop. I put these in all my conference rooms, and after about a year, I felt like I was literally the only person that was using them. So, I mean, they're only about $50 and they work really well, but at the end of the day, people weren't using them. My Windows users were still plugging in an HDMI because they're just so used to it. So you could look into those. They work well, but they just require additional training because people, quite frankly, aren't used to them yet. And I'm also hearing about another solution we looked at my AV company as well, called AirTame. AirTame is this streaming stick. I think they're about $350. That you install into your TV, and it allows you to, you know, mirror any device, whether it's Windows or Mac. The one caveat to that is you have to install a software on your PC to do that. And with Apple TV and the Microsoft Miracast adapter, you don't. It's just native to Mac and Windows computers. And so when you're designing these rooms, you need to think about all the steps that your guest might have to take to connect. And the more stuff you put in there, it's going to be more complicated. So we're not using AirTame now. We're looking at it. But yeah, I mean, just take that into consideration. The more devices you put there, the more pre-meeting setup it's going to take from your guest, the more time it's going to take for your staff. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're using. And I'm sure there's other technologies or different ways. But, you know, this is based on what I've seen over the past almost 2 years since we opened Shared Space.
Does the Miracast fill what some people would use Google Chrome for? Is it Chromecast?
Yeah, so Chromecast are awesome. We don't have any in our spaces right now. They can share Chrome screens, from my understanding. So if you open a Chrome window, PC or Mac, you're able to share it. We don't currently utilize that in our spaces, but I've heard it does work. But in essence, you're sharing a browser screen.
Okay, got it.
It might be able to share other programs, but I'm not positive off the top of my head.
So this might be a little bit tactical, but do you have signage in the meeting rooms to give instructions on how to connect to these devices, or does the manager kind of help people out when they get into the room, or how do you manage that?
Yes. You know, whenever we sign up a new member, it's important to train them on the basics of the conference room. But yes, we have little signs in the conference rooms, just easy to use instructions, because the goal is just to reduce the member needing help. So if you put the Wi-Fi information in the instructions and, you know, say connect to input 2 for HDMI, they can figure it out. But yes, some sort of printed out signage or something is definitely very helpful.
And then do you have like any furniture that you use to like hold the remotes or anything else that people need to use?
So yeah, it's funny you ask that, because again, with looking at Augusta, we're trying to decide what equipment and accessories we want to use. We really like the idea of using these little boxes, whether they're little wooden boxes or kind of small boxes that will hold the little dongles and extra cables that you might have. So we haven't standardized on them, but you know, you definitely want to keep your rooms clean and make it easy for your staff and your members to clean. And so we found having some sort of little remote box or something has helped immensely. And so I would recommend something like that to hold dongle, the remotes, so they have a place to go and don't, you know, run off in someone's pocket by accident or something.
Yeah, I know people take them accidentally a lot of times. We have all of ours labeled. We have one of those like label makers. So we go.
Oh yeah, you have to. People don't need to. They just put them in their bag because they're used to it. And then you never see them again.
Yeah, exactly. Gonna have like a budget for replacing the dongles.
Yep.
Okay, so we talked about projecting. How about screen recommendations, like sizes, smart TVs? What's the standard that you guys like to use?
Yes.
Think about what to put in what type of room.
Yeah, and so for this, I actually spoke with one of my old friends at Avive earlier about this specifically. So there's an official audiovisual rule that audiovisual companies use to determine the size of screen for a conference room. Mm-hmm. And that rule is the furthest seat at the end of the table should be no more than 2.5 times the width of the display. And I know that that's
I'm trying to do the math. I'm like,
What that formula pretty much ensures is that no matter who's sitting at the very, very end of the table, farthest away from the TV, that they will be able to read Excel documents. Because realistically, Excel documents are probably the smallest
scenario.
The smallest piece of data you're going to be looking at. And so it's important that even the furthest guy away can see that Excel data. So, you know, what that means in a more realistic sense is if you have a space that's 6 to 8 feet long, you probably want a 55-inch TV.
Yep.
If you have a space that's 12 feet long, you want to go to a 65-inch TV. 16 feet, you want to start looking at a 75. And then any distance that is longer than 20 feet, we recommend either an 85-inch display or a projector. And what all that data ensures is that the person that has the worst seat in the house or the one furthest away from the display can actually see everything that's going on without having to strain too much. You know, and I say those notes as those are kind of general AV rules of thumb. At the end of the day, budget is king. So it doesn't matter how big your room is. If you have a set budget, if you can't get a TV that's that big, it's not going to be the end of the world. There are other things besides TVs like the furniture and whiteboards and accessories that are probably more important than the exact size of the TV. But, you know, it's funny, so TVs have come down so much in price over the past couple of years. If you go on Amazon, you can find TCL Roku 4K TV, 55 inches, for a little over $300. And, you know, we at my audiovisual company, we'd sell these really nice high-end 24/7 commercial displays, but those are super expensive. But my thought is I could replace this TV four times in the time it would take me to buy one super nice commercial display.
Right.
And TV prices are continuing to come down. They're getting bigger and the prices are getting less. So I see nothing wrong in going to Amazon and buying some of these TVs. I don't think you're going to be at a disadvantage for not buying, you know, some top of the line TV because your guests don't really care that much. As long as the TV works, it's not an issue for them. But I mentioned projectors earlier. Projectors are another interesting topic because projectors deliver huge impact. You know, that's my favorite thing about projectors. You walk into a room or a training experience and you say, wow, that content is huge. But at the same time, they're much more costly to maintain and install. You have to buy bulbs. You then have to start worrying about lighting. Whereas with the TV, you kind of slap it on the wall and it just works wherever you put it. So projectors are great, but they just require a little more thought to them. You want to put them effectively in a room. Does that kind of answer your question, Jamie?
Yeah, that's great. And I have a couple of related questions. One is, what are your typical sizes for meeting rooms?
Yes, there are really a lot of different types of meeting rooms. And that's something that's definitely important as an experience that you want to deliver to your members. Herman Miller, the furniture company, has done a tremendous amount of research about what they're calling the open office, which is a lot what co-working is. But it's these kind of large offices and how large corporations are starting to use them in the modern workforce. What they find is that the large traditional conference rooms, you know, think the long rectangular tables with the seats lining the side, are still prevalent in so many offices today. But their research shows that most of the time they're underutilized. If you have a co-working space yourself, think about your large boardroom. Think about how often people are in there every day. And we definitely get good use out of ours. But compared to my huddle rooms and my smaller conference rooms, those things are nonstop in use.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely a place for those larger conference rooms. I'm not advocating you get rid of them, but we're seeing more and more organizations are moving more towards huddle rooms and a little bit smaller conference rooms. It's really important to provide different spaces for different kinds of work tasks. Because at the end of the day, everyone has different types of meetings. Some meetings might be for getting the deal signed and having a formal negotiation. You might have a meeting that's more about creativity and writing on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
Some meetings are about being quiet and thinking and not talking a lot and require a, a more quiet experience. Others are not for being quiet, and they're more open, and they're meant for more informal communication. And so as you're designing these spaces, it's important that you create a variety of experiences for your guest so that depending on the type of their meeting, they can go somewhere that suits their meeting. And so I know that that was a lot to describe. I really break my conference rooms out into three different types. You have first the huddle room. Now, I personally love huddle rooms. Huddle rooms are smaller rooms. They're made to fit 2 to 4 people, and they're designed so that the meetings are short and more impromptu. On my seats, I actually don't have backs on the chairs to emphasize. This isn't about comfort. This is a quick meeting where you get in there, you know, get with your 1 or 2 other teammates and kind of work out that content quickly, because that's what huddle rooms are for. It's getting to the point. And so I love huddle rooms. I try to do as many of my meetings in there as possible, but they are so, so popular these days. And as Herman Miller and a lot of these other companies are researching, they're finding that the majority of meetings between people these days take place between 1 and 3 to 4 people. I mean, most meetings today are not 20-person meetings. Right. They're small group meetings. Yeah. And so make sure that you build for these, because this is what people want, and this is the way that they will continue to connect in the future. I think that there's definitely a need for, you know, I'll talk about the next step. We have conference rooms. Those come after huddle rooms. Conference rooms are made for 4 to 10 people. The meetings are longer. The rooms are designed to be a little more comfortable. You know, it's what you'd use for if you had to get some formal document signed or something. But there's definitely an emphasis on a longer, prolonged meeting time. Maybe a little bit more comfortable couches or backs on your chairs or whatever you do. These are not meant for those quick meetings. And then lastly, you have the boardrooms and the training rooms. You know, these are made for 10 plus people. They're typically more high end. They're made for large groups. They have very nice seating. And that's where you'd go if you had to pitch your company, you know, to a board or something. You had to pitch it to executives. You wouldn't take them to a small huddle room. You'd take them to the grand boardroom. And there's room for all of them. I guess my biggest piece of advice is you probably need less boardrooms than you think you do, because people are using huddle rooms just nonstop.
Although to your point, it's good to have the options. The piece of data that we had on a webinar, it was a while ago now, but CloudVO is a sort of a meeting room lead gen partner. They have a network of workspaces globally. And so they shared data on their most, like the folks in their network that get the most meeting room business. And spaces that have 4 to 5 meeting rooms were kind of the winners, that had 4 to 5 meeting rooms at different size points. And their sort of hypothesis on that was that when someone comes in to use your space and uses one of those meeting rooms, maybe they come in for a board meeting, but they see all the other options you have, like to your point, a place to be more creative or a place to do, you know, an interview or like the fact that you can account for so many use cases, they think, oh, I should come back here because they have a meeting room for whatever I need, versus if you only have a board meeting. It's like,
you're so right. And companies today, more traditional corporate offices are still being designed with these really strict, rigid, formal boardrooms. And we're seeing more and more companies in Atlanta say, hey, I need an ideation meeting. I need to get out of my office and like have a fresh, you know, a fresh whiteboard wall. We put, you know, I'll talk about it a little bit later, but we put whiteboard walls in all of our offices because people need that canvas to express themselves and write stuff. And a lot of companies today just aren't building the correct type of meeting rooms to have that. And so I love it when people have meeting rooms at their own office, but they still book meetings with us because they feel more creative and effective when they're using our meeting rooms. And that makes me feel great that we've designed them in such a way where they're useful like that for people.
Yeah, and people, I think members are also getting more savvy. Like coworking used to be so new that people didn't know what to look for. And I think meeting rooms, phone rooms, like these are things that people show up and sort of know to look for now. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine the talking points on your tour guide scene include highlighting your meeting room options and kind of what's included. I think the other piece about that is meeting rooms, you talked about sort of the investment in screens. And I think, yeah, so budget matters, but also, you know, don't be sort of penny wise, pound foolish, because meeting room revenue can be significant if you are in a market where there are not a lot of other options, as you mentioned, like hotels are super expensive.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. And what we're finding is that these meeting clients, they start using us for meetings and they're like, hey, I'd love to like drink the coffee and work here normally. And so meeting clients turn into you know, reoccurring members if you treat them right. And without a doubt, I mean, you can't cheap out on everything in the conference room. One of the lessons I learned from my old company is that in a meeting room, believe it or not, the technology is not the most important part of the space. It's the furniture in that room and the furniture that has to be conducive to these different experiences. So make sure whatever tables, whatever you're putting it in there, I'd spend more money on the furniture than the technology because it's used more. It's so funny. When I started the company right out of college, I went to my kind of the people that ran that company and said, we should have a TV in every single meeting room. TVs everywhere. I always want to connect.
Yeah.
And it took them a while to really teach me that people don't always need TVs for their meetings. Sometimes they just need to get in a nice lounge experience with two couches and a whiteboard. But I didn't understand that at first. And now after being to more meetings, I understand that need. So what I'm really trying to say is, you know, spend some time and effort thinking about the furniture in the room, because that is the most important aspect of your meeting room, more so than the TV or technology.
So in your conference rooms, what does the furniture look like? What type of table and chairs do you, not necessarily brand if you don't want to share, but sort of what does that setup look like?
There is there's a great antique roadshow in Atlanta called Scott's Antique Roadshow that comes around once a month. And it's all of these different vendors that create tables and all sorts of different custom stuff. I met a group called Wood and Nickel out of Alabama and work with them to custom design the tables because I had the knowledge of what the correct table sizes were for the rooms. We worked and custom built these tables based on the specifications that I drew. I don't recommend always building custom tables. Yeah, while it was a good experience and you can get a better price on them, there are people that design conference room tables professionally and know all of the right sizes and heights and stuff. And so that's what we did. Like I said, we kind of have a variety of different tables from different manufacturers for different meeting experiences. So it's not necessarily like a one size fits all with the conference tables. I mean, I think it's more fun if you have different tables from different groups, and you definitely should have some level of standardization. But I think the meeting room is the one place where it's your opportunity to go funky and kind of break from the mold and be different from the rest of your space if you have a standard table. Or does that make sense, Jamie?
Totally. Yeah, I totally think so. Yeah, again, not related to tech, but do you have spaces in your larger rooms for food?
Yeah, so definitely with the larger rooms. And, you know, it's really more outside of a lot of the larger rooms because, in our experience, people will kind of, it's the pre-functory area where they'll go and have a quick bite to eat or a quick drink. And that hasn't necessarily been the first thought on my mind when we're building these. We normally will just drag a desk or something into those rooms because, you know, at the end of the day, the client won't mind too much if you don't have like a buffet table for them in there. They're more worried about the technology and the furniture and the space fits their entire team. But yeah, that's definitely a good thought.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. I mean, any other tips that we haven't covered in terms of screen placement and sort of room design?
Bright colors on the walls. So this is another tip that I learned from Vive, my old company, is that if you actually go and just paint the background color of the wall that your TV is on, it improves the contrast of the TV so much as opposed to just a white background. The colors will look more vivid if the TV is against a colored background. I personally like kind of plain colors because think if you put a really distracting wallpaper behind your TV, people aren't going to be focusing on the content. They'll be focusing on the wallpaper. So, you know, our main color is blue. So we have a lot of blue walls behind our TVs and it just kind of adds to that funkiness or that unique experience. But that's definitely a tip. That's definitely a relatively inexpensive that adds kind of an impressive punch to your meeting rooms.
I like it. And I'm making a note because we actually have an orange wall in one of our meeting rooms, and it's been on my list to change it, but it's actually not the wall that the TV is on. Right. So it feels a little too bright for the space, but it's good to know now when I pick my paint colors, the brighter one needs to go under the TV. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That pop of color behind the TV just, it really increases the contrast. That goes for a projector as well. It increases the contrast.
Yep. So do you do projectors in your training rooms?
Yes. Well, it varies depending on the size of our training room and the size of the ceiling. You know, I love projectors. Some people don't because, like I mentioned earlier, they do require maintenance. They're not as easy to use as TV. You know, you turn them on and they take 30 seconds to a minute. Turn on. And if you have windows in the room, you have to spend more money on a higher lumen projector because it will be washed out. So there's definitely more design considerations in a projector, But if you take the time and plan it out, it can really just, you know, kind of give people a really cool experience that they're not used to seeing. And projectors are getting cheaper as well. They're not quite as cheap as TVs, but compared to 5 years ago, the brightness and just the resolution you get has dramatically improved.
Okay, so let's talk about conference room reservation tech. And you mentioned, I know you use Office R&D. I just wanted to mention that because I'm sure people were curious when you said you have an app that you can do conference room reservations on. I thought, oh, people are wondering, what does he use? Mm-hmm. So Office R&D is your space management platform, and that came with an app. I think I'm getting this right? That
It's a white labeled app, and you pay additional fee. But the biggest point of that app and the reason we wanted it so bad and kept on asking them for it was for meeting room bookings. And so, you know, to talk about conference room reservations, if we go back right to when we opened MySpace, we had about 5,000 square feet, close to 40 companies in there, probably about little under 100 members at that time, and two meeting rooms. And it was a huge mess. I mean, there were companies that would say, I had the meeting room. No, I had it. And I mean, you know, they wouldn't fight, but we had to be polices and go in there and say, no.
Uncomfortable spot to be in when you're a community manager.
Exactly. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I said, look, we have to make the investment to get conference room technology so that it's no dispute. The conference room display is the law of who has the room and who needs to get in and get out. So, you know, as we grew, that problem lessened a bit as we got more conference rooms. But for smaller spaces, these room reservation tablets are a must. I mean, I think that they will save you so much time and effort in terms of managing the rooms. I think they'll make a significant impact on your business. So, you know, there's a couple different softwares out there that you can use for your iPad. iPads these days are just the easiest to throw up on walls, and they can be powered a couple different ways. There's one way called PoE, which is power over Ethernet, and you will run it from your IT closet, but it's a powered, looks like an internet Cat 6 cable that will plug into a little kind of dongle on your iPad and allow you to power it continuously.
Oh, nice.
I've also heard of spaces that use battery backups. They'll literally get like a 10,000 mAh, like a big battery, and put it on their iPad and replace it once a week. Definitely a little more manual labor. But if you're not as tech savvy and don't necessarily know how to run a Cat 6 cable, that is an option that definitely works.
Or if you're in an existing space and it's too expensive to run, right? If you have to kind of, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there's big batteries these days that you can go a week without having to replace it. And so, yeah, you also want to try to find some sort of mount online where you can mount your iPad. You know, for a long time, we just had the iPads in the conference rooms, believe it or not. And that worked as well because people kind of saw when their time was running out.
Yeah.
Right now we have them mounted outside so people that are waiting to use the room can see when it is next available and stuff. But if you don't want to buy a mount, and this could also be cheaper because you could just plug the iPad directly into the wall, set it right under the TV. And, you know, that's the law for who has the conference room at a given time.
Yep.
But highly, highly recommend some sort of reservation system. A really good one right now is called Robin. It's different from my co-working space management software, Office R&D, but it's, I'd kind of say, one of the top ones in the space, in the industry right now. There's another really good one called Team, T-E-E-M. And those are just two kind of conference room displays that you can, you know, it's an app you download on your iPad, and then you just connect it with a conference room, and there's some kind of finagling in the Google Calendar backend, but both of those products have very, very good guides that can help you walk you through it. But it definitely, it's impressive for guests. Most members have not seen this. Right now, really only high-end corporate offices have these.
Yeah.
And so when they come into your space and see it, it's a definite wow factor. Yeah. And when you show them that you can book a meeting on your phone and it shows up on the screen, I mean, it blows them away. And so highly recommend looking into some of these technologies, and it can really reduce stress for your team and you. So you're not worried about policing these all day, every day. And you'll still have to police them and clean them and take care of them, but this definitely helps with that. The policing never stops. Even with the conference rooms there, you're always going to have to kick people out of conference rooms that won't leave.
Awkward knock and interrupt. So your members book this conference rooms through their member portal on the Office R&D app or on the desktop version. If somebody externally wants to book, how does that work?
Yeah, so we have a public facing calendar, so non-members can go in and book. And it also, we have an email where people can just email in with their request.
Okay.
And we could just get back to them and book the room for them manually. But yeah, we allow non-members and members to book. We also partner with some other stuff like Liquid Space, for example, which you brought up before. Yep. You can connect your room calendars to Liquid Space. Yep. And Liquid Space, we actually get pretty good traffic for meetings through Liquid Space as well. And so there's a couple different ways that outside members can book, but you know, it's just got to be easy. There's got to be some email or form on your site that's a no-brainer that they'll get a response, because when people try to book meetings, it's generally in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
When they book the meeting, they need a response almost immediately that the room is confirmed, because they don't want to find out the day of their meeting, oh yeah, by the way, the room you booked, you can't use it anymore. So the quicker turnaround time you can give people when they submit these meeting requests, just the better rate of them actually coming and showing up and then using your space.
Right. And sometimes it's an office manager who needs to find one right now. And so they're going to go with the one who answers
the phone. That happened today. Someone called me and said, I need a room for 4 right now. And just walked in and we had an open room and it worked out. But yeah, you got to be able to supply that and then get them that information quickly so they can confirm the meeting. Because normally they're booking it for, a lot of times they book it for someone else. And so, like a boss or something that they got the task of booking it. So,
right. So they want to get that checked off their list immediately. So whoever's easiest to get a hold of, which I have to bring this up since we were talking about this and it's related to kind of meeting rooms. And so Michael just put you've always had live chat, which is that what you mentioned in the last podcast? It's just such a great example of, you know, it pops up. I think your picture pops up actually. Mm-hmm. Well,
It did.
You can always get a live person and you've got your phone number on there and you've got the book a tour buttons and you feel so accessible. And then you just implemented kind of some automated chat features to help people get to the conference room booking or to the tour booking really quickly. And I love that there's always a phone number there. And so,
I've heard you talk about this on your podcast before, Jamie, but your phone is one of the most important things you have in your business and you have to answer it. It blows me away the amount of co-working spaces when I go to other cities and stuff and want to stop by one for a day because I need a place to work that don't answer their phones. And it is just such an easy thing to do. Definitely put an emphasis on it or have your community manager do it, because I'm blown away by the amount of spaces that don't answer their phones.
Yeah. And I think if you want to be serious about things like meeting room visits, I mean, to your point, somebody calls today and wants a meeting room for 4 right now, and they're not sitting and waiting for an email response. They want to talk on the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to answer it. Have someone that has it, you know, on them at all times and or make it roll over to a cell phone or something. But yeah, whatever you do, have someone on it.
Another somewhat related question, but not direct to tech. Do you SEO work for your meeting rooms? Because you talked about, you know, platforms like Liquid Space, which are great lead gen partners, and we use PeerSpace. I don't know if that's just a Bay Area thing. We've been getting a lot of.
We actually just started using PeerSpace as well, and it's great. They actually had a photographer that came out, took some gorgeous photos of our space today, but they just entered the Atlanta market in this year. Yeah, I mean, it depends on your market, honestly. Some meeting room markets are more saturated than others. But if you have good meeting rooms, I don't see a reason why you shouldn't advertise them SEO. It's a lot of times when you go and are trying to put SEO for office space and really optimize for that, you'll find other co-working companies that have substantially larger budgets than you do in the office space SEO market. Yeah. And so if you can focus on things that might be a little more niche, like meeting rooms or meeting experiences, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. I mean, my perception on it's sort of like a chicken egg thing. Like if you build really great meeting rooms and you try to get the word out, like you can get meeting room business. But if you have mediocre meeting rooms, you may not get it. But you kind of don't want to invest until you know you can get the business. But I just, whenever I see well-designed meeting rooms, those operators, you know, are doing a great meeting room business.
Yeah. And I mean, the meeting room's half the battle as well. When that person comes in for the first time, you got to treat them, we're in the hospitality business. You have to treat them. It's their first time to your space. It's not a member using the room. This is a new guest. So make sure that you definitely treat those first time meeting room bookers like royalty. Walk them into the space, walk them through. They need to feel comfortable using your technology in your space. And if they can have the entire meeting experience, just feeling, you know, comfortable and they enjoy the coffee and they're not worried about technology at all, it will leave a very lasting positive impression and they will likely book again. Yeah. So definitely take care to treat those first time meeting room bookers with extreme care. You should treat all your guests with extreme care.
Yeah, totally. But right. Anything else on the reservation front that we didn't cover?
I think that's the most of it. I mean, we use Google Calendar, and that backend can be kind of confusing, but there are a lot of guides and tutorials out there if you're willing to dig into it that can walk. It's very doable. You don't need any programming knowledge or anything. You just got to, you know, put in the effort and learn, but it's worth doing.
Yeah. Awesome. So we kind of started talking about this before, but do you have, you know, you talked about starting with two meeting rooms and, you know, riots breaking out, but do you have a rule of thumb now that you're, you know, expanding and you've had a little bit of experience around, you know, how many meeting rooms do you do, like per square feet, or, you know, small meeting rooms and, or you call them huddle rooms versus yep. conference rooms? Yeah. Do you have a framework for that? Yep.
I mean, we're, to be honest, we're still kind of working through yeah. that ourselves. But, you know, what I will say is that it is very market specific. So even if we did have a specific framework for each place, your co-working space might be next to another co-working space that only focuses on meeting rooms.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those exist. And so,
there's one in Atlanta that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a great one in Atlanta that focuses only on meeting rooms. And so it really depends on the market, the location. I mean, if you're in the top of a really tall office building where you're not going to get a lot of foot traffic, might not make as much sense to do meeting rooms. But if you're in a very open, you know, location where you get a lot of drive-by traffic or foot traffic, then meeting rooms make a little more sense. So I think for even companies that have established a meeting room amount per square foot, it varies drastically per their real estate location.
That makes a lot of sense. And you don't have to share exactly, but what is your framework for hours of, you mentioned credits that you include for members. I think I've heard a couple people mention like, oh, we just let our, you know, members use unlimited time in meeting rooms. And then, you know, there's sort of the exact opposite side of the spectrum of, oh, members get zero time because yeah. you know, we pay rent on that real estate. And yeah, how do you look at it?
If you don't put a value on your conference room hours, if you just give it to people for free, it devalues your conference rooms in essence, because someone could be in there all day camping out in that room. And I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this, but yeah, I believe that you should have some sort of system to track meeting room hours, because it does put more value on your rooms. People just can't stay there all day. You know, our basic memberships start with 2 conference room hours, and then we kind of go up from there. And, you know, we're pretty casual with our guests. If it's a very slow day and there's a guy that's been sitting in a conference room for a while, I'm not going to go and kind of kick him out and say, get out of here. You know, you're using all your hours. But it's important that you have those kind of protections in place for when your space does get more and more busy. You know, each membership level has a value to it. And if they want more access to those rooms, they're just going to have to pay more money because there's so much demand for them. Does that kind of answer your question?
It totally does. Yeah, I think it's just good perspective for...
And it depends on your unique business model. You know, I said earlier that you have to put a value on them. It really depends on your business model and where you're looking to make that revenue. But I believe if you don't put a value on them...
Yeah, I think I don't want anybody to assume that they should, you know, they should not charge for them. Because, right, it's an amenity of the space. Some of it can be included, but...
You're always going to have people that try to just take advantage of it. And you got to think about that and make sure that there's rules and limits in place so that they can't take advantage of it. So you can say, hey, you're out of hours. You're not allowed to be in here.
Yeah. Or like, so we do certain number of hours. And then after that, it's a significant discounted hourly rate yeah. for members.
That's a great model as well.
Yeah. I was talking to my community manager about that today. I said, look, I don't want conference room time to be expensive for members. I want it to be super approachable. We just need to have some limit, some policy.
Yeah. I mean, and the prices actually, you know, make people actively think about getting a membership. If your conference rooms cost money and they're spending $50 an hour on this meeting room, you can say, hey, make a lot more sense. If you got this membership, you get X number of hours a month. So yeah, I mean that, but again, all of that factors into your unique business model. And, you know, it's not the same for everybody, but that's just our experiences.
Totally. Good. Well, we've covered a lot of ground. Anything that I haven't asked about that I should have?
Yeah, I'd love to go over some just brief extra items, things that I think are important for meeting rooms that we've learned and I've experienced over the past year. I brought up whiteboard walls earlier, but people love whiteboards. They love to express themselves and draw and diagram. And if there is a whiteboard, they will draw on it. We've looked at smart boards and all these other interactive technologies, and they're very cool. They're very expensive. And a lot of times, like I mentioned earlier, people get intimidated, ending up not using this really cool technology you have, but they have no problem picking up a whiteboard erase marker and writing on that. So whiteboards have been great and they're relatively inexpensive. I highly recommend having whiteboards, whiteboard walls. In terms of conference room phones, I get that question a good amount.
Ooh, great. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's important.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like the reliance on those is definitely shifting down and down because I think in the older days when people didn't always have cell phones or a direct line of communication, those were so vital. But now I'm trying to think of most of the conference calls I've been in over the past year. It's mostly a cell phone, and either on speakerphone or not, that's how I'm seeing them used a lot of the times. There's a really cool little product we found. It's called the Pioneer Raise Rally. And it's a little lightning. It's made by the audio company Pioneer. And it's a little speaker that you plug into your iPhone in the lightning port. It's unfortunately only Android people. But it acts as a little conference phone for a little conference speaker for your cell phone. So we'll just set the cell phone out on the table and plug in this little dongle, and it works amazingly. I mean, I was blown away when I first heard it, but we actually have some of these for our guests. And if someone really requests a conference room, a conference phone, yeah, I'll let them borrow this. I mean, they're blown away at how loud it gets and how good the microphone is on it. So that's called the Pioneer Raise Rally Lightning Speaker. And then lastly, for meeting technology, Jamie, you and I are recording this on Zoom, but if you're not familiar with Zoom, the meeting kind of video conferencing technology, Zoom, it is great. It allows you to have great video conference meetings that are just easy to use. The quality is great and it's free. I mean, there's different tiers, but Jamie, you've been using it for a while, but yeah, we love Zoom.
It's super reliable. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about this before we started. I mean, folks that are on Skype, or we used to get sometimes complaints like, oh, my Skype call dropped. There's a problem with the Wi-Fi in the conference room. I'm like, well, it's not the Wi-Fi. Stop using it for your investor calls.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all that little stuff just goes into making the meeting experience better because it all adds up at the end. And then that's how you get people back, is just say, man, that meeting was so productive, so much more productive than when we were at Starbucks, when we were at our business conference room. That's how you really retain those customers. And it's a lot of little things, but like I said, they all add up and can create a great meeting experience.
I love it. Michael, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today and your experience. And to your point, everybody's business is different and co-working has so many different flavors, but it's always helpful, you know, because it is still such a new industry, to hear, okay, what experiences are some folks having? And for people like yourself, who has a background in AV technology, you are a step ahead of most of us. So we appreciate you applying your expertise and sharing your experiences with us.
Well, thank you so much, Jamie, for having me on the podcast, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Awesome. And a quick reminder, because I know I was taking notes. Show notes will be at everythingcoworking.com/73. So anything that Michael mentioned, we will include in the resources mentioned in this episode list. Awesome. Michael, I will talk to you soon.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.